All right, morning, everyone. Today's daf is daf Chavav in Shabbos. We're in the middle of the second parak of Shabbos, and that means that we're talking about lighting Neros Shabbos. Almost the entirety of the second parak is dedicated to this topic. We went over the basics a number of times. Review is important. It's really the mother of learning. We light Shabbos candles, so the Rambam writes, the Gemara is never going to say why. The Gemara doesn't really speak in terms of whys. The Gemara speaks more in terms of whats, but the Rambam writes that we light candles light and illumination. So we do so on Friday night because of Kavod and because of Onen. We have to honor the Shabbos and we have to enjoy the Shabbos. So I mentioned the Gemara a number of times already, but I'll just reiterate. The Gemara says that we light Shabbos licht before Shabbos, and that's Kavod. Anything we do up in preparation of Shabbos, in anticipation of Shabbos, that's covered. The fact that the candles are now lit on Shabbos, so that's Oneg. That's a function of Oneg. And in the Gemara, actually, the Gemara speaks to one reason, another reason, if you will, in terms of why we light our Shabbos licht, and that's because of Shalom Bayis. And that's where we ended the discussion yesterday. We're going to continue today with the discussion of Shalom Bayis. Meaning, as Rashi points out, it's just, you're not going to be so happy if on Friday night it's dark in the room, and you can't see anything, and you run into your table, into your chairs, into other people. And so as a function of Shalom Bayis, so therefore you want your Shabbos licht to be lit. That's where we left off yesterday. There's one thing I want to discuss from yesterday's daf, which was really the end of the daf yesterday. Remember, we talked yesterday about whether or not there's a bracha when you light the Shabbos licht. Now, I know the Minhag Yisrael is to make a bracha, but as I mentioned yesterday, there's no mention in the Gemara whatsoever about making a bracha of Shabbos licht. And as opposed to Chanukah, where the Gemara says very clearly that you make a bracha when you light your Chanukah licht, but there's no mention of bracha when it comes to Shabbos licht. And so I mentioned yesterday that this is up for debate and discussion. Tosfos right here on the daf discusses whether or not you should make a bracha on your Shabbos licht. So Tosfos quotes people, I say very vaguely because Tosfos doesn't say who these people are, but Tosfos quotes people who says that you shouldn't make a bracha. Why? So one of the principal reasons, because the Gemara, when describing it, calls it a chova. Calls an obligation. Now, obligation as opposed to a mitzvah. My machorim is also a chova, and you don't make a bracha on my machronim. So Tosfos says you don't make a bracha on Shabbos lech. Tosfos quotes Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam strongly disagrees. Usually, that's his position. He strongly disagrees. So he's a very strong personality. So Rabbeinu Tam strongly disagrees. Rabbeinu Tam says no, you should make a bracha on your Shabbos lech. Minhag Yisrael, of course, is, and Tosfos quotes the Siddur of Amram Gon, where we do, of course, make a bracha on Shabbos lech. I'm sure everyone knew that. That was Tosfos' discussion from yesterday. The other thing I wanted to discuss from yesterday is the Talmidim. So you remember the Gemara told the story of Rav Yehuda Bar Yilai. Rav Yehuda Bar Yilai on Erev Shabbos, so he would wash his hands, his face, his feet. He would wear a talis. He was misatef. He was wrapped up in a talis. He looked like a malach Hashem, says the Gemara. And the Talmidim would sit around him. But the only difference is the Talmidim would cover their corners of the garment because the Talmidim would not wear tzitzis. Okay? And so that was a little bit strange. In fact, it was so strange. Rav Yehuda Bar Yilai says, I don't understand why you're not wearing tzitzis. That is strange. Meaning, by the way, when I say not wearing tzitzis, I mean by that, meaning that the students wore four-corner garments because all the garments back then were four-corner garments. But what I simply mean by that is that they wouldn't put the actual tzitziot on the four-corner garment. Now, why not? So he says, I don't understand why not. Now, the only thing he could consider is, well, maybe because they're wearing linen garments. And so the tzitzis, of course, is made up of wool, right? The strings themselves are made up of wool. And so now what are you doing? You're attaching a wool string to a linen garment. And so that's a violation of shatnez. Now, what we know generally is shatnez is aser, but by tzitzis, shatnez is allowed. Why? Because of the general rule of ase dochalos ase, because a positive commandment overrides a negative prohibition. So shatnez is allowed by tzitzis. So if that's the case, so he's just kind of bewildered, he's confused, how come they're not wearing tzitzis. Now, the Gemara, and it's the last thing we read yesterday, in the Gemara, Aman Chav Hei Amud Beis, I'm right before the two dots, I'm just going to reread it, I read it very quickly yesterday. The Inu Savri, now they thought, these are the students now, Gzera Mishum Ksus Laila, it's a Gzera, it's a decree because of Ksus Laila, because of garments at night. Now, we know the following. This, let me explain this line of the Gemara, and then we're going to move on to today. We know that the mitzvah of tzitzis is a mitzvah hayom. It only applies during the day. How do we know that? It's very simple. The pasuk says. The pasuk says, "Arisa maso," that by tzitzis the Torah says that you have to see it. Well, I know we can create light at night, but naturally, of course, there's no light at night, and you really can't see the tzitzis. So the mitzvah of tzitzis is only during the day. So the Gemara says here, the Gemara says elsewhere as well, that ksus laila, that your clothing at night, is not obligated in the mitzvah of tzitzis. Now, what exactly ksus laila means is subject to a machlokes amongst Rishonim. Some Rishonim say that ksus laila refers to garments that you wear specifically at night, i.e. pajamas. And some say ksus laila just simply means anytime you're wearing clothing at night, not necessarily clothing for night, but just simply clothing that you wear during the night. Okay, so it is somewhat debatable what ksus laila means, but the simple point of the Gemara over here is that at night you are not obligated in the mitzvah of tzitzis. So now let's think about this. Here's the thought process of the students. I'm going to now wear a linen garment. It's Friday night. I'm going to wear a linen garment, and now I'm going to tie tzitzis to the linen garment. You see why? Because the mitzvah of tzitzis is going to override the Isser of Shanes. But that's only true if I'm fulfilling the mitzvah of tzitzis. If I'm not fulfilling the mitzvah of tzitzis, so now what am I left with? I'm just left with the Isser of Shanes. So the students thought that if the garment is linen, don't put tzitzis on it because it may end up wearing it into the night. Now, it sounds like from the way I described the Gemara, explained the Gemara, that the definition of ksus laila is just simply wearing it at night, meaning it's not night clothing, but wearing it into the night. You can somehow get around that. But anyway, but that's what the students thought, and that's why the students did not put tzitzis on the garment, and this is what's called they thought it was a gzera. Now, how can, just one last point over here, how can you have a gzera uproot a mitzvah min Torah? So here you are now wearing a four-corner garment, and the students decided, well, because of the gzera, we're not going to wear tzitzis on the garment. So now essentially what they're arguing is that the gzera is uprooting a mitzvah min Torah, and the answer is very simple, and Rashi over here says it. The rabbis can do that. Meaning the Chachamim have the power, they have the legislative ability where they can legislate, even though it's going to uproot a mitzvah min Torah, but with one condition, and that is Sheva Al Taseh. That only if it is passively the mitzvah in the Torah, the mitzvah in the Torah is passively violated. So here, by not putting on tzitzis, the rabbis have that legislative power and authority. You did it? Okay.
That was a good argument.
Yeah, it's right. In other words, they were thinking people. Right. Obviously, the rabbi disagreed, but that's okay. In the Gemara, now we're continuing in the Gemara. Oh, by the way, see the last Tosos over here, where Tosos notes that this issue of whether tzitzis is, that a person's pater from tzitzis at night, is somewhat open to a debate and discussion. From our Gemara over here, it seems clear, glot in our Gemara, that the mitzvah of tzitzis is, a person is exempt from the mitzvah of tzitzis at night, which essentially means that the mitzvah of tzitzis is, in fact, a time-bound mitzvah. It's mitzvah esei shazman grama, and Tosis on the bottom points out, and women are exempt from the mitzvah. Meaning that from other Gemaras, you could somehow conclude that the mitzvah of tzitzis is not time-bound. From our Gemara, Tosis says, you see very clearly, it is time-bound. There is a Gemara out there that talks about one Amora who made tzitzis for his daughters, but Tosis says, but you see from our Gemara that that's not normative halacha. That's not the conclusion. The conclusion is that women are in fact exempt from tzitzis because it is a time-bound mitzvah. That's the Baam Tosus on the Amud. You can see that Tosus inside. Okay, Tanu Rabbanan, we're in the Gemara now. I'm continuing from where we left off. We're right in the middle of the page. Chav Hei Amud Beis, the Gemara quotes a pasuk from Eicha. Vatiznach Meshalom Nafshi, Nashisi Tova. The pasuk in Eicha says, I have forsaken shalom nafshi, peace. What is it talking about? My vitz is nach mishalom nafshi. Amar Rabbi Abba Ozer halakas ner b'shabes. So it's referring to halakas ner, meaning that part of the Churban HaBayis included, for whatever reason, we no longer were able to light our Shabbos licht, and therefore, vatiznach mishalom nafshi, we forgot about shalom. No more shalom bayis. Nashiti tova, I forgot good. So I'm Rav Yirmiyahu Zubeis Amerchatz, meaning forgetting good. What else did we no longer have after the Chorban Habayis? We no longer had a bathhouse. We're no longer able to bathe, and that not bathing is obviously not good. We know that on Yom Kippur, obviously one of the inuyim, one of the ways that we torture ourselves in Yom Kippur is by not bathing, by not washing ourselves. So that's what the Pasuk in Eicha is referring to, v'nishiti tova. Zurichitas yadam raglayim b'chamin. Rav Yitzhak Navcha, I'm sorry, what I do? There are two explanations. I'm Rav Yirmiyahu Zubeis Amerchatz, and Rav Yochanan Amar Zurichitas Yadayim V'Raglayim B'Chamin. Okay, very similar to one another. A bathhouse, washing your hands with hot water, washing your hands, feet, and face with hot water. Okay, Rav Yitzhak Nafcha Amar Zumita Na'a V'Kelem Na'im Sha'aleha Rabbi Abba Amar Zumita Mutzas V'Ishim Kusheta L'Tamid HaChamim. Another explanation of what the Pasuk in Eicha is referring to of Nashiti Tova is a nice bed, nice kelim, right for your table. Or could here kelim could refer to clothing, a nice bed, a woman who is adorned. Okay, so these are various suggestions. Thank you. These are various suggestions of what the pasuk in Eicha is referring to when it says v'nishiti tova. Tanu rabbanan ezu ashir. Who's wealthy? Now, why the Gemara is quoting this brayso over here? Yeah, why is the Gemara quoting this brayso over here? Okay, somehow you need to make a connection between this Gemara and the previous Gemara. All right, that's a little tricky. I have to come up with something. I have to suggest something. I have nothing right now. Anyway, the Mishnah Pirkei Avos asked this very question. I think we're all familiar, right? Ezu Ashir Samech V'Chalko. So the Mishnah Pirkei Avos says, you want to be wealthy, so you got to be happy with what you have. Because if you're not happy with what you have, and all you want to do is accrue more and more, so I've seen over my short lifetime here, you never end up really being happy. All you do is just simply want more and more, and it's not my observation, it's really the Chachamim of Pirkei Avos who teach us that, and all we get to do over the course of our short life is just simply notice how correct they are. That's all. So so that's the Mishnah Pirkei Avos that we're familiar with. What is going to be less popular, but we get to learn right now, is the Gemara here in Shabbos. The Gemara in Shabbos deals with the same question. So, Ezu Ashir Kol Sheyesh Lo Nachas Ruach Ba'Asher Divrei Rav Meir. So, Rav Meir basically echoes the same thing that we learned in Pirkei Avos, that as long as you have Nachas Ruach Ba'Asher, in other words, if you're pleased with the wealth that you have, so that means that you're wealthy. Okay, the Gemara gives a Siman now, and there are going to be other opinions. Why the Siman comes here, meaning the siman should have been placed before Rebbe Meir. Okay. A number of open-ended questions. Because the mem of the siman is a reference to Rebbe Meir, and the test that we're doing now is Rebbe Tarfon. Okay. I don't know. Rebbe Tarfon, Amar Kol Sheyesh Lo Kuf Kramim, Umei Asados V'Chuf Avadim, Sha'ovdin Bahen. So Rebbe Tarfon says, you know what wealth is? Is as long as you have 100 vineyards and 100 fields, and 100 slaves, so now you're wealthy. Now, I don't know, it's kind of hard to understand. Rabbi Tarfon is actually giving us a threshold of wealth, and this is something that we should be striving for. Hard to understand what Rabbi Tarfon is saying over here, and Rabbi Tarfon is disagreeing with Rabbi Meir. It's also hard to imagine. So again, Rashi doesn't answer any of these questions that I'm raising right now, but okay, it requires more understanding of what Rabbi Tarfon is doing over here and what he's trying to teach us. Rabbi Kiva Amar Kol Sheyesh Lo Isha Na'a B'Ma'asim. So Rabbi Kiva says, you want to be wealthy, so get a good wife. Right? He's not talking about attractiveness. In other words, I know he says the words Isha Na'a, but he says Isha Na'a B'Ma'asim. Okay, get a wife who's good in deeds. Okay, you need a Balmidos. Okay, good. So for us here, it may be too late. But in other words, but I guess this is advice that we could give to our children. Rabbi Yossi Amar Keshel. Sorry. We should have learned this Gemara years ago. So Rabbi Yossi Omer Kol Sheyesh Lo Beis HaKiseh Somach LaShulchan. Now Rabbi Yossi says they have the bathroom right next to the shulchan, right next to your table. Now this is not the first time in the Gemara that we've expressed this idea that having a proximate bathroom is an excellent thing. But what the Gemara over here is expressing, just, you know, carefully understand, the Gemara over here is expressing is that means you're wealthy. Meaning, being happy, that's fine. That I think we all understand. It's almost self-evident. But in other words, the Gemara says that you're wealthy if you have the bathroom right next to your table. So how do you understand it being wealthy? So the simple explanation I would think in the Gemara, okay, my suggestion, take it for whatever it's worth, is that the Gemara basically speaks to over here to good health. Meaning that when you have the bathroom proximate to your table, so you're going to be a healthier individual. So if you are, God forbid, stricken with not good health, so you see the medical bills, I know we have insurance, but you, I mean, a good number of us, but even with insurance, with a lot of medical bills, you see the basically all your wealth getting depleted because of a lack of good health. What the Gemara over here is advising is that if you have your bathroom right next to your table, you're basically, that is a preventative towards good health, and so therefore that will be a way to secure your wealth. Okay, we are done with the advice, and we're now back to the mitzvah of Hadlakas Neros Shabbos. Tanya Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Amar Ein Madlikim Mitzari. You can't light with Mitzari. Now I'll translate Mitzari as balsam, and I'll still tell you I don't know what that is. It's I know I've heard of it before, balsam oil, but don't ask me to identify it. I don't know exactly know what it is. But anyway, it's a light oil.
Wood.
Oh, it's a wood. So my timer. So why not? So what's wrong with Mitzari? Now, for those of you who remember, and you say your Ketores often, so you'll know that Sari is one of the ingredients that goes into the Ketores. So it should be good, and the Gemara says no good. So my time, Amar Rabba mitoch sharecho no deif, gzereshem istapik mimeno. So here, it's a concern that we have not yet seen. The Gemara has not expressed this previously. You know what the problem is? It really smells nice. Meaning, as opposed to the Itron, which we talked about earlier, which really smells bad, and what's going to happen is everyone's going to run out of the house, here, the concern is, it smells really good. And you're thinking to yourself, well, let's not use it all right now, let's save some of it. And so therefore, you may take some of it away. And there, and what? And then what? So Rashi over here writes, you know what happens? When you have a burning lamp, and you take some of the oil away, so you just violated a malacha. Rashi says you violated which malacha? Kibui. You extinguished. Now this is a very interesting idea. Let's speak to this idea just a little bit right now. Meaning, we certainly understand that when you take the wick and you put your fingers over the wick and you blow out the and you put out the fire, so you understand how that's kibui. But taking oil away from the lamp, that's also kibui. So Rashi says unequivocally, yes, it is. In fact, you take a look at the last Rashi in the Amud, could not say it any clearer. V'tanya b'Tosefta, he quotes the Tosefta, Hanosein Shemen Laner, Chayav Mishum Mavir, V'hamistapek Chayav Mishum Mechabe, V'maseches Beitza B'Gemara Yom Tov. Okay, so in other words, you open up a Gemara Beitza, Daf Chav Beitz, we're going to get to it shortly enough. No, that's not true. It'll be a little bit. We're here in Shabbos for a while, but anyway, when we get to Beitza, though, we're going to see together. What is it? The second parak? I think so. That if you add oil to a burning lid to a burning lamp, so that is mavir, and when you take oil away, so that's kivui. Now, just chemically, physically, how do we explain that? Because when you think about it, it's a little bit strange. Meaning, it may the fire may be lit for less time, but right now, as I'm taking oil away, that's an actual present diminishment of the fire. So, right, you really have to sit on that point. You have to think about that point. And Rashi here over here expresses it absolutely is. You are, in other words, because let me see if I can be clear about my point. If it just is that when I take oil away, that just simply means that later down the road, the fire will burn for less time. So that's not actual kivui. We have a different term for that. You know what that's called? That's called gram kivui. That's called causing extinguishing. But gram on Shabbos, we're going to talk about gram over the course of the Masechta. If all I'm doing is not doing an actual malacha, but I'm setting the clock in motion, or setting the mechanics in motion where I'm going to cause a malacha to be done, so min haTorah, I didn't violate Shabbos. Now, min haRabbanan, you're not allowed to do it, but min haTorah, you have not violated Shabbos. So when I take oil away, That sounds a little bit more like gram kivui and not actual kivui. So really what you have to try to explain and explore is how when you're taking oil away, that's not just causing the fire to be lit for less time, but right now, right here, that's an actual diminishment of the fire. Okay. Now, Amale Abaye, Lema Marmim Neshu Av, now Abaye says, now really, there's another consideration altogether. Meaning, we can't light with sari on Friday night, for Friday night. So one explanation is because it smells so nice, you might take some of the oil away, and at least according to Rashi, that's an Isser of Kibbutz. There's another issue, which is it's af. Now, the word af over here does not mean nose, because had it meant nose, it would have been with a aleph. Okay? So this is a word which we have not seen. We don't see that often. If you take a look at Rashi, nidbak bekosli abayis, umalik is abayis. Kind of splatters all over the place. It does not burn smoothly and calmly, but it's combustible. And it sprays, and basically, there's a sakana. There's a simple danger that when you light with sari, your house is going to catch fire. Okay. So in other words, if I may, basically what the Gemara is saying is that there's two issues. There's an issue of Isser, and there's an issue of Sakana. Isser, I may violate the Malach of Kibui. Sakana, my house may go on fire. Now, Chadava Od Kamar, so the Gemara says, look, we're not debating. Both points are correct. I'm on the top of Chavavim and Aleph. So the Gemara says, yeah, there's an Isser element and there's a Sakana element. Now, usually when we say Isser and Sakana, which one do we take more seriously? And now I'm asking this question, right, good. I'm asking this question from a halachic standpoint, meaning, in other words, from the halachic mind. Which one do we take more seriously? So the Gemara says, you take Sakana more seriously. Chamir Sakanta Mi'isura. Okay, don't ask me where to find that Gemara. It's out there somewhere in Shas. The Gemara says it a couple of times that we take Sakana more seriously than Isser. Yeah. I just can't tell you where to find the Gemara, but yeah. So Chamir Sakanta Misura. So now right Psachim, right in the Ayins. Right. Okay. Anyway, it's out there. Let's. I try to show off the kiosk that I don't have. That would be wonderful. Okay, so so that's a general rule. So over here, when the Gemara is giving us two reasons why you can't light with sari, so basically now there's a Sakana element and there's an Isser element. Now, once we know the Sakana, why mention the Isser altogether? That may be a reasonable question. I don't have a suggestion. The Gemara tells a story. You're going to enjoy the story. I usually don't try to hype up the Gemara stories, but this is a story. I mean, when I say enjoy, meaning It's gonna be an interesting one. I know this never happens, but the Gemara tells a story where a mother-in-law did not like her daughter-in-law. Okay, never happened in the history of Jewish people, but the Gemara over here tells an anecdote. Okay, it's anecdotal. So a particular mother-in-law did not like her daughter-in-law. So Amar La, so she says to her, Zil is kasha b'machadafer sama. So I want you to do, she says to her very casually and very sweetly and obviously not with any sincerity, I want you to adorn yourself with balsam oil. Azla ikshit, so then she does so as per her mother-in-law's instructions. Right, she wanted to impress her mother-in-law. She wanted to just, or maybe she just simply wanted to listen to her mother-in-law. Now she says to her daughter-in-law, now go into the other room and go light the lamp. So Azla it la shraga. So she does exactly as her mother-in-law's instructions. In pachpanur va'achalta, and she now catches fire and she gets burnt in the fire. Okay, now I know. The point of the Gemara telling this story is what? Now, obviously, the simple point of the Gemara right now is just simply hammer the point that we just made. That sari is very combustible, sari is very flammable, and here we're not worried, here it's not the house catching fire, it's the daughter-in-law catching fire, but so I understand that. Is there any other ideas that the Gemara is trying to convey over here? The general animosity between mother-in-law and daughter-in-law. And by the way, I quipped earlier, and I obviously attempted to make humor earlier that it never happened before. Did you know that the Gemara actually understands and realizes that there is animosity between mother-in-law and daughter-in-law? It is normal. I mean, I know it's not nice, but it's normal for there to be a small amount of friction between mother-in-law and daughter-in-law. The Gemara at the end of Yevamos speaks to this idea. When we get to the Gemara at the end of Yevamos, if you can remember this, you'll see exactly what I mean by that when I say that the Gemara understands that there's a general, you know, uncomfortable element between mother-in-law and daughter-in-law. The Gemara now continues. Umad lasa'art yishir nevuzaradan rav tavachim l'kormim l'yogvim. Okay, the Gemara quotes a pasuk in Yirmiyahu. Nevuzaradan, that's Nebuchadnezzar's butcher, right? In fact, he's called Rav Tavachim, right? The butcher of Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar, of course, the responsible party for destroying the first base of Mikdash, the 586 before the Common Era, but that's their history. Our history puts it somewhere around 421 before the Common Era. All right, for another time, right? We talked about this recently. So anyway, the Gemara, the pasuk describes how there were some Jews left in Eretz Yisrael, meaning most of the Jewish people exiled, and where did they go? They went to Iran. So the Persia, where they lived with Nebuchadnezzar, the Babylonians. Then the Babylonians were conquered by the Persians, and story of Mordechai, Esther, right? You know the history. But anyway, there was a few number of Jews that were left in Eretz Yisrael after Chorban Bayis Rishon. And who were they? So the pasuk describes Kormim Yogvim. Now, the word Kormim usually refers to Karim, which usually refers to a vineyard. So these were people that were responsible for working the vineyard. The Gemara over here does not understand the pasuk Kipshuto. And the Gemara understands, and you'll see in just a moment why we're here. So Korman Tani, Rav Yosef Ela Malakti Afar Simon, Me'in Gedi Va'ad Ramasa. So the Kormim are the people who collect the Afar Simon and bring it from En Gedi up to Ramasa. Now En Gedi, you know, is right by the Dead Sea, right? One of my favorite hikes in Eretz Yisrael. So that's where they would collect the Afar Simon. And Yogvim, Elu Tzaydei Chilazon, Misulamo Shel Tzor Ve'ad Haifa. And the Yogvim are reference to people who trapped the Chilazon from Sulamos up until Haifa. Now the Chilazon produced the blue ink, which in turn produced the Tcheles. And what was that? That was the color of royalty. And presumably, a little conjecture on my part, the purpose of doing so is because the Babylonians wanted the royal blue color, and so therefore they left people to harvest the chilazon for that royal blue. Tanu Rabbanan. And obviously the point why we brought in this pasuk in Yirmiyahu is because the Kormim mentioned the pasuk are the ones who collect the Afar Simon. Okay, which is just the story that we just discussed. Tanu Rabbanan im alikim tevel tamei b'chol. The Ein Tzarich Lomer b'Shabbos. Now, Tevel Tamei. Tevel, we all know, is a reference to produce that has not, where Trumas and Maisos have not been taken off. Okay? And it is prohibited for anybody, Kohen and non-Kohen alike, to eat Tevel. The punishment for eating Tevel is Misa Bidei Shamayim. So, we're not talking about eating Tevel, we're talking about using it as a fuel. And the Braisa says you cannot do that. Ein malikim b'tevel tamei b'chol min tzarich lomer b'Shabbos. If your tevel becomes tamei, which means that ultimately, if and when I take off trumas and maestros, that of course means that the truma is going to become tamei, but I'm not allowed to light it during the week, and it goes without saying for Shabbos as well. Kayote bo ein malikim neft lavan b'chol min tzarich lomer b'Shabbos, and you're not allowed to use nafta as well. White nafta you're not allowed to use. Now bishlama neftlava mimne shuaf. Now the white nafta, what's wrong with it? It's very combustible, it's very flammable, much like the tsari that we described earlier this morning. Aval tevel tame my taima. But why am I not allowed to use tevel tame? Why am I not allowed to light tevel tame? Amakraveani hine nasai delchaz mishmeres trumasai. We quoted this drasha just yesterday. So second day we get to see this drasha. B'shtei trumos hakasa medaber. Achas trumator v'achas trumatameya. So trumator and trumatameya. There is a requirement for kohanim to be shomer, to be guardians of the truma, whether the truma is tahor, whether the truma is tameh. Ma truma tahora ein lecha ba ela mishas harama ve'elech. Now, by truma tahora, that means, when do the kohanim become the shomrim, the guardians of the truma tahara, only after harama, meaning only after the truma has been separated from the rest of the produce. Same thing is true when it comes to truma tameah. After truma tameah, in the chabah, let me show us the rama ve'elech, that when it comes to truma tameah, so the only from the point of harama, meaning before harama, while the truma tameah sits there latently in the produce, I say latent because it needs to be separated from the produce, from the tevel, so while it sits there latently, you're not allowed to burn it. Only from the point of separation, then and only then, are you allowed to burn the truma tameah. Interesting discussion between Rashi and Tosfos over here. I'll just mention it, but it requires a significant amount of discussion. What if the tevel is not tameh? Meaning our Gemara's discussion over here is about tevel tameh. What if it's tevel that's not tameh? Are you allowed to, in other words, let's say olive oil, where you didn't separate chumas and maestros. Can you burn that olive oil? Obviously you're not allowed to eat it. That's a given. Right, that's tevel. That's it's a chiyuv misa b'dei shamayim. Are you allowed to burn tevel? Meaning, the question really is: are you allowed to benefit from tevel? Is tevel asur behana? Okay, not tevel tameh, but tevel tahor. So you'll see Rashi, you'll see Tosfos. They have a discussion about this. Okay, I just bring it up right now, just so that you know, cover our bases. Gufa. We go on in the Gemara. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Malik Mitzari Vechenaya. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Tzari Eino Ela Sraf Me'aseh Ketav. According to the opinion of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, you're not allowed to use Tzari. And the Gemara quotes Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says that Tzari is the sap that comes from the Atzeh HaKetav. Right? I guess it's the balsam tree. Rabbi Shmuel Amar Kol Yotzei Min Ha'Etz Melikim Bo. Rabbi Shmuel says that anything that comes off the tree you're not allowed to be madlik with. Rabbi Shmuel Ben Baruch Amar Melikim Al B'Yotzei Min Ha'Pri. You're only allowed to use fuel that comes off of a fruit, meaning fruit oil, otherwise known as, I mean, I'll just give the example of olive, but basically there are other fruits out there, at least so says the Gemara, where you could extract oil from the fruit. Seeds, I guess, would also be a good example, right? A seed is a, right? Nuts would be another good example, where you can extract oil from the fruit. As long as the oil comes from the fruit, so that could be used towards your Shabbos licht. Rabbi Tarfon Amar Malikin Ebel Shem El Mesham and Zayis Bovan. The opinion of Rabbi Tarfon is that you can only use olive oil. Amar Rav Yochanan Ben Nuri Al Raglav Amar. Now Rav Yochanan Ben Nuri stands on his feet. That is an expression of the Gemara that means I am neged. I oppose that position. I am bini good. How could it possibly be that the halacha demands something of people that they simply don't have? Meaning the people out in Bavel. All they have is sesame seed oil. And the people out in Madai, they only have nut oil. And the people of Alexandria, which presumably is Egypt, so they only have radish oil. And the people in Kaputkia, so all they have is neft, even though the Gemara earlier said neft is very flammable, very combustible, you shouldn't use neft, but what are they supposed to do? That's all they have. So, in other words, the only thing that we're going to exclude as a prohibited oil is the first Mishnah in Shabbos. The six oils mentioned over there, that's it. That those are the oils which are prohibited. All other oils are acceptable. Yes. Okay. They had olives, one of the Shevas Aminim. Umaligim is Shem and Dagan over Itran. Now, you can use Shem and Dagan and you could use Itran. Rabbi Shimon Shazuri Omer Malik Meshem and Bakuos. He says that you can light using Shem and Bakuos of an Eft, Simchas Omer, Kol Ayotzim and Abbasar, Ein Malikim Bo, Ela B'Shem and Dagan. Anything that comes out of an animal, fat that comes out of an animal, so that cannot be used towards oil, but if you want to use fish guts, by all means use fish guts. Now, the Gemara points out, Simchas is really reiterating what the Chachamim said. Meaning, it's the Chachamim who said, Madlikim B'Shem and Dagen. So what is Simchas adding to the discussion? Simchas Hainu Tanakama, Iko Beinayu Devrav Brona, Amarav. So the Gemara goes back to this is now the third time in this parak that we quoted Rav Brona Marav. He says that if I make a compound, a hybrid, if you will, of oils which are acceptable and oils which are not acceptable, and even if the majority of the mixture is oils which are unacceptable, but then I mix in a little bit of acceptable oil, so Rav Brona Marav says, that's fine. You could do that. And between the Tanakama and Simchus, who subscribes to Rav Brona Marav? Lo Misayme. The Gemara says, I don't know. Meaning one of them subscribed to Rav Brona Marav, I just simply don't know which one of them do. Tanya Rav Shimon Lazar Omer. Kol hayotzei min ha'etz ein bo mishum shalosh am shalosh u'misachin bo chutz mipishtan. Now, the remainder of today is going to be dedicated to the topic of Tumah and Tahara. So why? Meaning, why is the Gemara now moving into a discussion of Tumah Tahara that will take up the rest of today's daf? Because we talked in terms of halachas of oils for your Shabbos licht, that any oil that comes out of a tree is unacceptable. In other words, it has to be an oil from a fruit, it has to be an oil from a nut, but the actual tree itself, if you have a flammable sap that comes off a tree, so the Gemara says that you're not allowed to use such an oil. So now the Gemara says that as long as we're in the discussion of kol hayotzei min ha'etz, so now we're going to talk about this in the context of Tumah and Tahara. Okay, the time is late, and unfortunately we started late this morning. Tomorrow we're going to try to start earlier. Tomorrow there's no laning, so we're going to try to start the daf even earlier tomorrow. And I realize this week is going to be a little bit tough as davening really cuts into the learning. This is the last week. Friday, Motzei Shabbos, we change the clocks. So once next week rolls around, so we're going to have a much better chance of starting on time. Okay, we'll stop over here.